If one wants to be a law-abiding citizen, does Proverbs make it perfectly clear how to do that? Welcome to The Good Work. We continue our series on the book of Proverbs. This week, we're focusing on chapters 28 and 29. My name is Alden Tonson. I'm your host. My conversation partners are Dave Thomas, Dean of the Walla Walla University School of Theology, and Linda Emerson, an assistant professor of philosophy in our history and philosophy department. All right, the question. Does Proverbs tell us how to behave ourselves and be good, upstanding citizens?
When you put the word perfectly, but to make it perfectly clear, the answer is always no, Alden.
Are you going to say it's clear, but kind of muddy clear?
Yeah. I think there are some indicators, but I wouldn't say it's perfectly clear.
Linda, would you like to correct that statement?
I concur.
Oh, you concur?
With Dave. Right now.
All right.
For the moment.
Why did you ask that question, Linda?
Because of those that I know are there in the Christian community who think they can make a checklist.
Oh. And simply, Proverbs provides the markers for that.
Oh, it's so clear.
Yeah, I think you've done a really great job, Alden, of showing us where the contradictory verses are, so that it makes the checklist a little more difficult, the checklist approach a little more difficult.
Well, that too, and I've used this for a long time, the two on answer a fool according to his folly, don't answer
right,
a fool.
Right.
So you have several decisions to make. Number one, do you have a fool on your hands? And then are you going to speak up or are you going to shut up?
Sometimes.
Sometimes one, sometimes the other.
Right.
And the practical value of discovering this for me, and this is very personal here, is it has dramatically transformed my devotional life. I kind of grew up with kind of a Boy Scout version of, you know, God's got up there his list for Thompson. Three things you can do. Pray. Study, share, okay? And praying and studying, but sharing was always a difficult one. But the mental process was when those checks were made, then I was free for the rest of the day. In other words, my devotional experience was almost entirely external. And with that approach, I would sometimes miss my devotions and not even miss them. And that's embarrassing. When I discover that every person I meet is a call to prayer. And they are all so different that I never run out of things to pray for now. And it has really been, and I will often deal with what I call the three-corner triangle, the conversation counter. And this is where seeing the Bible as a casebook is really very helpful in this process. Because if I see things absolutely clear, then I'll come to you, Linda. You need to do this. Boom. Settled. See. But if I say, well, now here's an example. Here's an example.
You see it as a code book, you mean, that you find everything as a mandate.
Yeah. Then I can say, well, here I've got a half a dozen examples. All have a potential bearing on my dealings with Linda. What do they do with that?
Is that the casebook approach?
That's the casebook approach, you see.
But the code book would mean everything is a mandate.
Go to the code.
Everything is spelled out. Mm-hmm. See. Now, my approach to inspiration, at least my critics have said that what I've done is exalted reason over revelation. And that always puzzles me because my reason is the only thing I have for evaluating that. I can't use my elbow or my chin or anything else.
So how did they come to the conclusion that you've elevated reason over revelation?
Because of
a deeply rooted codebook approach.
No, by using reason.
Yep, by reason. See.
Oh, the codebook approach is a demonstration of...
You simply take the commands and do it.
That's the revelation.
That's the revelation
the revealed
model.
Approach.
It's there. You do everything.
See. And so this casebook approach allows for too much flexibility, and you should return to the codebook approach.
If you conclude that somebody has elevated reason above revelation, you figured that out behind.
How have you figured that out?
You used reason to come to that conclusion.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's right. But you see, what you need is the other partner in the... I mean, this is a three-corner triangle. See, you've got the Bible providing the cases, but they don't apply themselves. The only part of my body I can use to evaluate that is my reason, but I know my reason is crooked. So what I have to do then is invite God's presence through his Spirit. And this is what I call not simply petitionary prayer, asking him to do that. It is more purifying prayer.
Or surrendering.
So that I'm aware. See, if I were really ticked off at you, Mm-hmm. Now, maybe I should use Dave because it's...
Yeah, do that.
They're, but if I really ticked off at Dave and we're in the process, almost ready to punch him in the nose, if I could be aware of the fact that I am praying for David and still aware of that consciously, it would be much more difficult for me to pull that off. See, and that's what I think, you know, praying without ceasing. You live a life. And then so I come to Scripture and say, Lord, I know my head's crooked, but I'm asking you to help me to make the right position. If we would all do that, then you see, it would transform our community. But it's when we don't think about one another, just simply, here's the list. Do it, Linda. Get on with it.
And with the list, it's easy to check up on other people and say, aha, Linda, your list has got a few check marks that it needs to be made.
And that actually might be true. But this reminds me of the central dilemma in the story of Jean Valjean and Javert. That Javert is not able to move from a code book, if using your model, to move from a code book to a casebook way of thinking about human morality. And I mean, he does not know what to do with Jean Valjean. He knew what to do with Jean Valjean when Jean Valjean stole a hunk of bread and he could haul him in front of the magistrate for the full penalty under the law. But there's no emotional intelligence. And I guess what I hear all the way through the Proverbs so far is not only this, rational approach, but emotional intelligence in a deep way. That, in other words, a deep understanding.
And a relational intelligence.
Which is part of emotional intelligence. So that we consider the deeper issues of living humans with humans as we judge, which in some cases we really must do, and of course we have to do that as law-abiding citizens. I mean, judgments have to be made about who is and who isn't.
But Alden, you cannot make enough rules to cover all the contingencies
of
humanity.
That's one of the problems with the code book approach. There aren't all we need. We're constantly making new rules.
And rules don't affect the heart. They don't change They don't change the systemic problem of humanity. Mm-hmm.
And rules tend to defeat the need for trust.
Well, and the problem, and one of the problems is that the rules at a certain point can easily become disconnected from the deeper principles that actually inform the creation of the rules in the first place. You know?
And I mean, I was thinking about that proverb earlier that talked about somebody who is not despised for stealing when they are starving to death.
Right.
Now, you know, I think all of us would approach somebody who stole on that basis very differently than somebody who stole just to be riotous, or to be to advantage themselves somehow.
So. Yeah, you know, that reminds me in book one of the Confessions, when Augustine says, you know, he was a kid and he did dumb things as a kid, and one of those was just to steal some pears from a neighbor's tree, and he said, "I did it just because I wanted to."
Yeah.
I wasn't hungry. I didn't even like pears. It wasn't even peer pressure. I just wanted to, and I did it. And he's just cringing, remembering this way of being.
You know, I heard a story this week in view of all the unhappy police stories that have floated. I heard this morning of a policeman who was called to a store where a woman had stolen a dozen eggs. And in confronting her, and I mean that in a gentle way, he approached her and found out that she had stolen them because she had a child who had no food. And the policeman ended up buying the eggs. And when he went to talk to the store, you know, before he bought the eggs, he went and explained, and the attitude was very different than if he just tried to get in there and sneak out a dozen eggs and see if I can get away with it. See?
Well, that comes back to the proverb we looked at in an earlier segment, and that is, you know, don't punish the poor for being poor.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that happens easily in our simplistic treatment of the poor are poor because they deserve to be poor. Well, actually, some people probably are poor because they deserve to be poor. Yeah. But not all the people, even adults who are poor, deserve the kind of poverty that they live in.
If you've grown up in a poor home,
you're feel
locked in.
The issues of generational
not
poverty.
Not all rich people are rich because of diligence.
Pardon me? And not all rich people are rich because of diligence. There's a presumed moral privilege.
And not all of them are rich because of intelligence. Right. Some of them are just downright lucky.
And some of them are crooks, let's be honest.
That's true.
So there are crooks everywhere. I mean, I'm not trying to castigate wealthy people either. I'm just saying we don't have, whatever.
Well, there are a couple of things which, in the printed published study guide I will develop here. But what I would like to show here, and we can just take some time, you don't have the classic evangelical doctrine of justification by faith, where you have a penalty that needs to be paid and that's satisfied. That's not in Proverbs, at least I don't think so. But what I do find in Proverbs are those principles that establish the basis for a restored relationship to God. Mm. And that's what I find down here, mercy and salvation, not a judicial statement of innocence, but key passages that point us in the right direction. 28:13, whoever conceals their sins does not prosper, but the one who confesses and renounces them finds mercy.
Nice proverb.
Blessed is the one who always trembles before God, but whoever hardens their heart falls into trouble. The greedy stir up conflict, but those who trust in the Lord will prosper. Fear of man will prove to be a snare, but whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that a strong enough doctrine of salvation?
Well, yeah, because I think at the heart of salvation is the restoration of a relational, a happy relational circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think that, when you look, for example, at the theories of atonement, there are five or six of them, and none of them are completely adequate, and we get into these hair-raising fights over which one is the most adequate. And I like to suggest that they all have something to say, and that the whole question of atonement is more comprehensive than any one theory that we've invented to describe.
John Brunt likes to use an illustration of a house, that the cross is inside the house and you look from the different windows.
Yeah, and I like the old story about the men of Hindustan who one had a tree and one had a snake and one had a fan, and they thought, but it all turned out to be pieces of an elephant. You know, they were blind men and they couldn't see.
Yeah,
that's kind of a cool little story.
Yeah.
Well, it's, I think, terribly important to recognize that we'll find even ways to God in different ways.
Yeah.
But the picture presented here in Proverbs of one who trusts the Lord, he will take care of things. You turn from your evil ways and go to the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You will find forgiveness. You will find restoration. Now, the official study guide wanted to have an emphasis here on Torah as something revealed. But that's kind of a curious one.
Mm-hmm.
Because you really have Torah as something which is actual instruction here and not having to do with something that's revealed. But we'll have to pursue that discussion later. Thank you, Linda and Dave, for your contributions. And my thanks to David Olson, our program engineer, to all of you for listening in for The Good Word. I'm Alden Thompson.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.